But you're wrong. You can do something about it. You don't have to live like this, day in and day out. There are facilities, places that can take much better care of her. She'll have more opportunity, and you and Crew won't be tied to this house every day for the rest of your lives. Jeremy's jaw hardens. I knew I shouldn't have said anything. I appreciate that you think I deserve better, but put yourself in Verity's shoes. He has no idea how far I've walked in Verity's shoes over the past 2 weeks. Believe me, I have been. I make a frustrated fist and tap it on the counter, trying to find a better way to word it all. She wouldn't want this for you, Jeremy. You're a prisoner in your own home. Crew is a prisoner in this home. He needs to get away from this house. Take him on vacations. Go back to work and put her in a facility where she can receive full-time care. Jeremy is shaking his head before I even get the sentence out. I can't do that to Crew. He's lost both of his sisters. He can't go through another loss like that. At least if she's here, Crew can still spend time with her. He didn't indicate his own desire to have her here, only Crew's. Take moments then, I tell him. You can put her in a facility part-time so it's not weighing you down. Bring her home on the weekends when Crew is out of school. I walk over to him and take his face in my hands. I want him to see how much I worry for him. Maybe if he sees that someone actually cares about his well-being, he'll take this conversation more seriously. Take moments for yourself, Jeremy, I say quietly. Selfish moments. You deserve to live a life where you have moments that have nothing to do with her, and everything to do with you and what you want. I feel his teeth clench beneath my palms. He pulls away from me and presses his hands into the granite, dropping his head between his shoulders. What I want? He says quietly. Yes. What do you want? His head falls backward, and he laughs, once, like that was a stupid question. Then he says one word, like it's the easiest question he's ever answered. You. He pushes off the counter and marches toward me. He grips my waist with both hands and presses his forehead to mine, looking into my eyes with nothing but need. I want you, Lo. My relief is met with a kiss. It's different from our first kiss. This time he's patient as his lips move lazily against mine, and his hand curves around the back of my neck. He's savoring the taste of me, drawing up my desire with every motion of his tongue. He bends a little, lifting me, and then he wraps my legs around his waist. We're leaving the kitchen, but I don't want to open my eyes until we're alone behind a locked door. Verity isn't ruining it for me this time. Once we're in the master bedroom, he releases his grip on me, and I slide down him, our lips slipping apart. He leaves me standing next to my bed as he walks toward my bedroom door. Take off your clothes. He says it without facing me, and he's locking my bedroom door. It's a command, one I'm eager to follow now that the door is locked. We watch each other undress. He takes off his jeans as I'm taking off my shirt, and then his shirt comes off with my jeans. I remove my bra as his eyes move over me. He's not touching me, not kissing me, just watching me. So many emotions flood me as I remove my panties. Fear, excitement, irritation, desire, trepidation. I slide my panties down my hips, over my legs, and then kick them off. When I stand up straight, I am on full display. He soaks me up with his eyes as he removes the last of his clothing. Something inside me shifts, because no matter how accurate Verity's physical descriptions of him were, I wasn't prepared for the full magnitude of his body. We're both standing there naked, our breaths exaggerated. He takes a step closer, his eyes on my face and nowhere else. His warm hands slide up my cheeks and through my hair as he brings his mouth down on mine again. He kisses me, soft and sweet, with just a tease of his tongue. His fingers trickle down the length of my spine and I shiver. I don't have a condom, he says as he cups my ass and pulls me against him. I'm not on the pill. My words don't prevent him from lifting me and lowering me to the bed. His lips circle my left nipple, briefly, then brush across my mouth as he hovers over me. I'll pull out. All right. The word makes him smile. He whispers, all right, against my lips, as he begins to push into me. We're both so focused on connecting we aren't even kissing, just breathing against each other's mouths. I squeeze my eyes shut as he tries to fit his entire length inside me. It hurts for a few seconds, but when he starts to move, the pain is replaced by a pleasurable fullness that makes me moan. Jeremy's lips meet my cheek, and then my mouth again before he pulls back. When I open my eyes, I see a man who, for once, isn't thinking about anything other than what's right in front of him. There's no distant look in his eyes. It's just him and me in this moment. Do you have any idea how many times I've thought about being with you? It's a rhetorical question, I'm assuming, because his kiss that immediately follows prevents me from answering it. He cups my breast while he kisses me. After about a minute of this position, he pulls out of me and rolls me flat onto my stomach. He enters me from behind, lowering his mouth to my ear as he pulls out. I'm going to take you in every position I've imagined us in. His words feel as though they settle in my stomach and catch fire. Please, is all I say. With that, he places a palm against my stomach and pulls me onto my knees, pressing my back against his chest without slipping out of me. His breath is warm against the back of my neck. I snake a hand up and grip his head, pulling his mouth against my skin. That position lasts about 30 seconds before his hands slip to my waist. He rotates me so that we're facing each other and then slides me back onto him. I feel weak against his strength, his arms effortlessly moving me around the bed every few minutes. I realize in all the times I've read about his intimacy with his wife, she always had to have some form of control over him. I relinquish all my control to him. I let him take me however he wants me, and he does for over half an hour. Every time he seems close to release, he pulls out of me and kisses me until he takes me again, kisses me, repositions me, takes me, kisses me, repositions me. It's a cycle I never want to end. Eventually, we're in what I'm assuming is one of his favorite positions, him on his back, his head on a pillow, my thighs on either side of his head. But I'm not sure if we ended up in this position because of him or because of me. I've yet to lower myself onto his mouth because I'm staring at the teeth marks on his headboard. Close my eyes because I don't want to see them. His palms are sliding up my stomach to my breasts. He cups my breasts in his hands, and then he begins to slowly part me with his tongue. I let my head fall back and I moan so loud I have to cover my own mouth. He seems to like the noise because he does the exact same thing with his tongue again, and the ecstasy that surges through me propels me forward until I'm gripping the headboard. I open my eyes. My mouth inches away from the headboard, inches away from the bite marks Verity left behind from all the times he had her in this same position. When Jeremy's fingers slide down my stomach and accompany his mouth, I have nowhere for my screams to go. With a position he has me in, I'm compelled to lean forward and stifle the sounds of my climax. I bite down on the wood in front of me. I can feel Verity's teeth marks beneath mine, different, unaligned with my own. I bite harder into the wood as I come, determined to leave deeper marks than she ever did, determined to think only of Jeremy and me every time I look at this headboard in the future. Verity is mostly confined to one room, but her presence looms in almost every room in this house. I no longer want to think about her when I'm in this bedroom. After I come, I pull away from the headboard and open my eyes, seeing the fresh marks I've left behind. Just as I run my thumb over them to wipe away my saliva, Jeremy pushes me onto my back, and I'm suddenly beneath him again. He doesn't even need to enter me to reach his climax. He presses himself against my stomach, and I feel the warmth spilling onto my skin as his mouth finds mine. I can tell by his frantic kiss that this is going to be a long night. 19. Our second round happened in the shower half an hour later. Our hands were all over each other. Our mouths were one. And then he was inside me again, my palms flat against the shower wall as he thrust into me beneath the spray of the water. He pulled out and came on my back before washing me clean. We're in the bed again, but it's almost 3 in the morning, and I know he's going to go back to his room soon. I don't want him to. Being with him in this way is everything I imagined it would be, and somehow, I feel okay being inside this house when I'm also wrapped in his arms. He makes me feel safe from the things he doesn't even realize are dangerous. He has me tucked against him, an arm wrapped around me as I lie against his chest. His fingers are tracing up and down my arm. We've been fighting sleep, asking each other questions. The questions have taken a more personal turn, because he just asked me what my last relationship was like. It was shallow.
Why?
I'm not sure it was even a relationship, I say. We defined it that way, but it only revolved around sex. We couldn't figure out how to fit into each other's lives outside of the bedroom.
How long did it last?
A while. I lift up and look at him. It was with Corey, my agent. Jeremy's fingers pause on my arm.
The agent I met?
Yes.
And he's still your agent?
He's a great agent. I lay my head back down on his chest, and Jeremy's fingers resume their movement down my arm.
That just made me a little jealous, he says.
I laugh because I can feel him laughing. After it's quiet for a beat, I ask him a question I've been curious about. What was your relationship like with Verity? Jeremy sighs, and my head moves with his chest. Then he positions us so that I'm on the pillow and he's on his side, making eye contact with me.
I'll answer your question, but I don't want you to think bad of me.
I won't, I promise, shaking my head.
I loved her. She was my wife. But sometimes I wasn't sure we really knew each other. We lived together, but it's as if our worlds weren't connected.
He reaches up and touches my lips, tracing over them with the tips of his fingers.
I was insanely attracted to her, which I'm sure you don't want to hear, but it's true. Our sex life was great. But the rest of it, I don't know. I felt like there was something missing in the beginning. But I stayed and I married her, and we started our family because I always believed that deeper connection was within reach. I thought I'd wake up one day and look in her eyes, and then it would click. Like that mythical puzzle piece had finally snapped into place. It's not lost on me that he mentioned loving her in the past tense.
Did you eventually find that connection?
No, not like I had hoped. But I felt something close to it, a fleeting intensity that proved a deeper connection can exist.
When was that?
Several weeks ago,
he says quietly.
In a random coffee shop bathroom with a woman who wasn't my wife.
He kisses me as soon as that sentence escapes him, like he doesn't want me to respond. Maybe he feels guilty for saying it, for momentarily feeling a connection with me after trying to feel that connection with his wife for so many years. Even if he doesn't want me to react to that admission, I feel something grow inside me, like his words sink into me and expand in my chest. He pulls me against him, and I close my eyes, tucking my head against his chest. We don't speak again before we fall asleep. I wake up about 2 hours later to his voice in my ear.
Shit.
He sits up, and most of the covers go with him.
Shit.
I rub my eyes as I roll onto my back. What is it?
I didn't mean to fall asleep.
He reaches to the floor and then begins pulling on his clothes.
I can't be in here when crew wakes up.
He kisses me, twice, and then walks toward the door. He unlocks it, then pulls on it. The door doesn't budge. He jiggles the handle as I sit up in bed, pulling the covers over my exposed breasts.
Shit,
he says again. The door is stuck. Something drops inside me, and I'm abruptly ripped from the pleasure of last night. I'm back in the moment. In yet another scenario where I feel desolate inside this eerie house. I shake my head, but Jeremy is facing the door so he can't see me. It isn't stuck, I say quietly. It's locked from the outside. Jeremy turns his head,
and looks at me, his face giving way to concern. Then he tries pulling the door with both hands. When he realizes I'm right, and that the door is latched on the outside, he starts beating on it. I remain where I am, scared of what he might find when he finally gets that door open. He tries everything to open it, but then he resorts to calling out Crew's name.
Crew!
Jeremy yells, beating on the bedroom door. What if she took him? I'm not sure she would have. She doesn't even like her kids, but she likes Jeremy, loves Jeremy. If she knew he was in this room with me last night, she'd probably take Crew out of spite. Jeremy's mind hasn't gone there yet. In his head, Crew is playing a prank on us, or the lock somehow accidentally latched itself when he closed the door last night. Those are the only plausible explanations to him. Right now, he merely sounds annoyed, not at all concerned. Jeremy glances toward the alarm clock on the nightstand, and then beats on the door again.
Crew, open the door!
He presses his forehead against it.
April will be here soon, he says quietly. She can't find us in here together.
That's where his head is? I'm thinking his wife kidnapped his son in the middle of the night, and he's worried he's going to be caught fucking the house guest? Jeremy.
What?
He says, beating against the door again. I know you think it isn't plausible, but did you lock Verity's door last night? Jeremy's fist pauses against the door.
I can't remember,
he says quietly. If by some bizarre chance it was Verity who locked us in here, Crew probably isn't here anymore. When he looks at me, his eyes are full of fear. Then, in one swift movement, he stalks across the bedroom and unlocks the window. He lifts it, but there are two panes of glass. The second one isn't giving away as easily as the first. Without hesitation, he reaches to the bed and pulls a pillowcase off of a pillow. He wraps his hand in the case, punches through the glass, kicks it, and then crawls out the window. Several seconds later, I hear him unlock my bedroom door as he passes it and heads for the stairs. He's already in Crew's bedroom before I make it out of the master. I hear him run across the hall to Verity's room. When he makes it back to the top of the stairs, my heart is in my throat. He shakes his head. He bends over, clasping his knees, out of breath.
They're asleep.
He squats as if his knees were about to give way, and he runs his hands through his hair.
They're asleep, he says again, with relief.
I'm relieved, but I'm not. My paranoia is starting to reach Jeremy. I'm not doing him any favors by bringing up my concerns. April walks through the front door moments later. She looks at me, then at Jeremy squatting at the top of the stairs. He glances up and sees April staring at him. He stands and walks down the stairs, not looking at me or April, as he heads to the door, pulls it open, and walks outside. April looks from me to the front door. I shrug. Rough night with Crew. I don't know if she buys it, but she walks up the stairs like she doesn't give a shit if I'm telling the truth or not. I go to the office and close the door. I pull the rest of the manuscript out and begin to read. I have to finish this today. I need to know how it ends, if it even has an ending. Because I'm at the point now where I feel like I need to show this manuscript to Jeremy. He needs to know that he was right when he felt they never really connected. Because he didn't really know her. Things aren't right in this house. And until he mistrusts that woman upstairs as much as I do, I have a feeling something else is going to happen. The other shoe is going to drop. After all, this is a house full of chronics. The next tragedy is already long overdue.
Chapter 14. It's easy to remember everything about the morning Harper died, because it only happened a few days ago. I remember how she smelled, like grease. She hadn't washed her hair in 2 days. What she was wearing, purple leggings, a black shirt, and a knitted sweater. What she was doing, sitting at the table with Crew, coloring. The last thing Jeremy said to her that day, I love you, Harper. Chasten had been gone 6 months that day, to the day, which meant I had spent 182 and a half days building resentment for the child responsible. Jeremy had slept upstairs the night before. Crew cries for him almost every night. So for the last 2 months, he's been sleeping in the guest bedroom upstairs. I tried to tell him it's not good for Crew. He's spoiling him. But Jeremy doesn't listen to me anymore. His primary focus are his two remaining children. It's strange how we have one less child for him to focus on, yet that somehow turned into requiring more of his focus. We've had sex 4 times since Chasten died. He can't seem to get it up anymore when I try. Not even when I suck his dick. The worst part is that it doesn't even seem to bother him. He could take Viagra, but he refuses. He says he just needs more time to adjust to life without Chasten. Time. You know who didn't need time? Harper. She didn't even go through an adjustment period after Chasten's death. She never cried, not even a single tear. It's weird. It isn't normal. Even I cried. I guess it makes sense that Harper wouldn't cry. Guilt can do that to a person. Maybe guilt is why I'm writing it all down. Because Jeremy needs to know the truth. Someday, somehow, he'll find this, and then he'll realize how much I fucking loved him. Back to the day Harper got what was coming to her. I was standing in the kitchen, watching her color. She was showing Crew how to color on top of another color to make a third color. They were laughing. Crew's laugh was understandable, but Harper's? Inexcusable. I was tired of holding in my anger. Are you even upset that Chasten is dead? Harper lifted her eyes to meet my gaze. She was pretending to be afraid of me. Yes? You haven't even cried. Not once. Your twin sister died, and you act like you don't even care. I could see the tears welling up in her eyes. Funny how the kid Jeremy believes can't express emotion can bring on the tears when she's being called out. I do care, Harper said. I miss her. I laughed at her. My laughter brought on the actual tears. She scooted her chair back and ran up to her bedroom. I looked at Crew and flicked a hand in Harper's direction. Now, she cries. Figures. Jeremy must have passed her upstairs, because I could hear him knocking on her door. Harper? Sweetie, what's wrong? I mimicked him, using a squeaky, childlike voice.
Sweetie, what's wrong?
Crew giggled. At least I'm funny to the 4-year-old. A minute later, Jeremy walked into the kitchen.
What's wrong with Harper?
She's mad, I lied. I wouldn't let her go play by the lake. Jeremy kissed me on the side of my head. It felt genuine, and it made me smile.
It's a nice day out, he said. You should take them to the shore.
He was behind me, so he didn't see me roll my eyes. I should have thought of a better lie to excuse Harper's tears, because now he wanted me to take them outside and play with them.
I want to go to the water,
Crew said. Jeremy grabbed his wallet and his keys.
Go tell Harper to get her shoes on. Your mom will take you. I'll be back before lunch.
I turned around and faced him. Where are you going?
Groceries, he said. I told you this morning.
He did say that. Crew ran upstairs and I sighed. I'd rather do the shopping. You stay and play with them. Jeremy walked up to me, wrapping an arm around me. He pressed his forehead to mine, and I felt that gesture go straight to my heart.
You haven't written in 6 months. You don't go outside. You don't play with them.
He pulls me in for a hug.
I'm getting worried about you, babe. Just take them outside for 30 minutes. Get some vitamin D.
Do you think I'm depressed? I said, pulling back. That was laughable. He was the depressed one. Jeremy set his keys on the counter so he could hold my face with both of his hands.
I think we're both depressed, and we will be for a while. We need to look out for each other. I smiled at him. I liked that he thought we were in this together. Maybe we were. He kissed me then, and for the first time in a long time, he kissed me with tongue and very little grief. It felt like old times. I pulled him to me and lifted onto my toes, deepening the kiss. I felt him harden against me, without coercion this time. I want you to sleep in our room tonight, I whispered. He smiled against my lips. Okay, but there won't be much sleeping. His tone of voice, his heated eyes, that grin. There you are, Jeremy Crawford. I've missed you. After Jeremy left, I took his damn children to play by the water. I also took the last book I'd written in my series. Jeremy was right. It had been 6 months since I'd written anything. I needed to get back in the groove. I already missed a deadline, but Pantom was lenient, thanks to the tragic, accidental loss of Chasten. They'd probably be even more lenient on my deadline if they knew what had really happened to her. Crew walked out onto the dock toward the canoe. I tensed, because the dock is old and Jeremy didn't like them being on it. But Crew didn't weigh much, so I relaxed a little. I doubted he could fall through. He sat down at the edge of the dock and stuck his feet in the canoe. I was surprised it hadn't floated away yet. It was hanging by a threadbare rope. Crew doesn't know it, and maybe he'll find out one day. But he was conceived in that canoe. The week I lied and told Jeremy I was pregnant was the most prolific week of sex we'd had to date. But I'm pretty sure it was the canoe that did the trick. It's why I wanted to name him Crew. I wanted a nautical-themed name. I missed those days. There were a lot of things I missed, actually. Mostly I missed our lives before we had children. The twins, anyway. Sitting on the shore that day watching Crew, I wondered what it would be like to only have him. It would be another adjustment if Harper were to pass, but I figured we'd get through it. I wasn't much help after Chasten died because, for a while, I was grieving too. But if Harper were to pass, I could be more help to Jeremy during his recovery. This time, there would be very little grief on my part, since all my grief was reserved for Chasten. Maybe most of Jeremy's grief was reserved for Chasten, too. It was a possibility. I used to assume that the individual deaths of a person's children would be equally difficult for them. Losing a second or even third child would hurt just as much as the first experience. But that was before Jeremy and I lost Chasten. Her death made us swell with grief. It filled every crevice inside of us, every limb. If the canoe were to capsize with the children in it, if Harper were to drown, Jeremy might not have room for more grief. Maybe he was at full capacity. When you've already lost one child, you might as well have lost them all. With no more room for grief and Harper no longer around, the three of us could become the perfect family. Harper? She was several feet from me, playing in the sand. I stood up and wiped the back of my jeans. Come on, sweetie. Let's go for a ride in the canoe with your brother. Harper jumped up, unaware she stepped foot onto the dock, that she'd never know what the earth felt like beneath her feet again. I get front, she said. I followed her to the edge of the dock. I helped Crew climb in first, then Harper. Then I sat down and carefully lowered myself into the boat. I used the paddle to push away from the dock. I was in the back of the boat, and Crew was in the middle. I paddled us out to the middle of the lake as they leaned over the edge, running their fingers in the water. The lake was calm as I looked around. We lived in a cove with 2,000 feet of shoreline, so we didn't get much of the lake traffic out here. It was a quiet day. Harper sat up straight in the canoe and wiped her hands on her leggings. She turned around, her back to Crew and me. I leaned forward, close to Crew's ear. I covered his mouth with my hand. Crew, sweetie,
Hold your breath. I gripped the edge of the canoe and leaned all my weight to the right. I heard a small yelp. I wasn't sure if it came from Crew or Harper, but after the yelp and the initial splash, I heard nothing. Just pressure. The silence pressed against my ears as I kicked my arms and legs until I broke through the surface. I could hear splashing. Harper's scream. Crew's scream. I swam toward Crew and wrapped my arms around him. I looked toward the house, hoping I could make it back to shore with him. We were farther out than I'd realized. I started swimming. Harper was screaming. Splashing. I continued to swim. She continued to scream. Nothing. I heard another splash. More nothing. I kept swimming and refused to look back until I could feel the mud seep between my toes. I gripped at the surface of the lake like it was a life vest. Crew was gasping and coughing, bobbing up and down, clinging to me. It was harder than I thought it would be to keep him afloat. Jeremy would thank me for this, for saving Crew. He'd be devastated, of course, but thankful too. I wondered if we'd sleep in the same bed that night. He would be exhausted, but he would want to sleep in the same bed as me, hold me, make sure I was okay.
Harper!
Crew yelled as soon as he cleared his lungs of water. I covered Crew's mouth and dragged him to the shore, plopping him down on the sand. His eyes were wide with fear.
Mommy,
he cried, pointing behind me.
Harper can't swim.
Sand was all over me, stuck to my hands, my arms, my thighs. My lungs felt like fire. Crew tried to crawl back toward the water, but I pulled his hand and made him sit down. The ripples from the commotion of the water were still lapping at my toes. I looked out at the lake. But there was nothing. No screaming, no splashing. Crew was growing more and more hysterical. I tried to save her, I whispered. Mommy tried to save her.
Go get her,
he screamed, pointing out at the lake. I wondered then how it would look if he told anyone I didn't go back out into the water. Most mothers wouldn't leave the water until they'd found their child. I needed to get back in the water. Crew, we need to save Harper. Do you remember how to use Mommy's phone to call Daddy? He nodded, wiping tears from his cheeks. Go! Go to the house and call Daddy! Tell him Mommy is trying to save Harper and he needs to call the police!
Okay,
he said, running up to the house. He was such a good brother. I was cold and out of breath, but I trudged back out into the lake. Harper? I said her name quietly, afraid if I called too loudly, she'd get a second wind and pop up out of the water. I took my time. I didn't want to go too far and risk touching her, bumping into her. What if there was still life in her and she clung to my shirt, tried to pull me under? I was aware I needed to be out here when Jeremy showed up. I needed to be crying, cold, on the verge of hypothermia. Bonus points if I was taken away in an ambulance. The canoe was upside down, closer inland than when it flipped. Jeremy and I had flipped the canoe a couple of times before, so I was aware there were air pockets when it was positioned like it was. What if Harper had swam to it? What if she had clung to it and was hiding under it, waiting to tell her daddy what I had done? I worked my way to the canoe. I moved carefully, not wanting to touch her. When I reached the capsized boat, I held my breath and went under the water. I popped up inside the canoe. Oh, thank God, I thought. She wasn't there. Thank God. I heard Crew calling my name from far away. I ducked under the water and popped up outside the canoe. I screamed Harper's name, full of panic, like an actual devastated mother would.
Harper! Daddy is coming!
Crew yelled from the shore. I started screaming Harper's name even louder. The police would be here soon, before Jeremy.
Harper!
I went under several times so that I'd be out of breath. I did that over and over until I could barely stay afloat. I screamed her name and didn't stop until a police officer was pulling me out of the water. I continued to scream her name, throwing in the occasional, "My daughter!" and "My baby girl!" One person was in the water looking for her, then two, then three. Then I felt someone fly past me onto the dock. He ran to the end and jumped in head first. When he popped up, I saw that it was Jeremy. I can't describe the look on his face as he yelled for her. It was a look of determination mixed with horror, mixed with psychosis. I was crying real tears at that point. I was hysterical. I wanted to smile at how appropriately hysterical I was, but I didn't, because part of me knew I had messed up. I could see it in Jeremy's face. This one would be even harder for him to recover from than Chasten. I didn't anticipate that. She'd been underwater for over half an hour when he finally found her. She was tangled in a fishing net. I couldn't tell if it was green or yellow from where I sat on the beach, but I remember Jeremy losing a yellow fishing net last year. What are the odds that I tipped the canoe in the exact spot it was tangled beneath the surface? Had the fishing net not been there, she probably would have made it to shore. After she was untangled, the men helped Jeremy lift her onto the dock. Jeremy tried to perform CPR until the paramedic made it to the edge of the dock, and even then, he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop until he had no choice. The dock began to cave in, and Jeremy rolled right off the edge of it, cradling Harper in his arms. Three other men remained on the dock, reaching for her body. I wondered if that moment would haunt him, having to catch his dead daughter's body as she fell on top of him in the water. Jeremy wouldn't let go of her. He found his footing in the water and carried her all the way to the shore. When he reached the sand, he collapsed, still holding her. He pressed his face into her sopping wet hair, and I heard him whispering to her, "I love you, Harper. I love you, Harper. I love you, Harper." He said it over and over as he held her. His sadness made me ache for him. I crawled to him, to her, and I wrapped my arms around them both. "I tried to save her," I whispered. "I tried to save her." He wouldn't let go of Harper. The paramedics had to pry her from his arms. He left me there, with Crew, while he climbed into the back of the ambulance. Jeremy didn't ask me what had happened. He didn't tell me he was leaving. He didn't look at me at all. His reaction wasn't quite what I had planned, but I realized he was in shock. He just needed time.
20. I'm gripping the toilet as I vomit. I was sick before I even finished the chapter. I'm shaking, as if I had been there. Like I witnessed firsthand what that woman did to her daughter. To Jeremy. I press my forehead against my arm, struggling with what to do. Do I tell someone? Do I tell Jeremy? Do I call the police? What would the police even be able to do with her? They'd lock her up somewhere, a mental institution. Jeremy would be free of her. I brush my teeth, staring at my reflection. After I rinse my mouth out, I stand up straight and wipe my mouth. As my hand moves across my face, I can see the scar in the mirror. I never thought this scar would become insignificant to me, but it's starting to feel that way. What I went through with my mother is nothing compared to this. What happened between us was a disconnect, a broken bond. This was murder. I grab my bag and search for my Xanax. The pill is clenched in my fist as I walk to the kitchen. I pull a shot glass out of the cabinet and pour Crown Royal into it, all the way to the top. I pick up the shot glass just as April rounds the corner. She pauses, staring at me. I stare right back as I pop the pill into my mouth and down the shot. I go back to my room and close my door, locking it. I pull the blinds down over the hole in the window to block out the sun. I close my eyes and pull the covers over my head, as I wonder what the hell I should do. I wake up sometime later, feeling a warmth travel down my body. Something touches my lips.
My eyes flick open. Jeremy. I sigh against his mouth as he lowers himself on top of me. I welcome the comfort of his lips. Little does he know that every ounce of sadness his kiss is eliminating is sadness I feel for him, for a situation he knows nothing about. I adjust the covers, pulling them out from between us so there's no barrier. He's still kissing me as he rolls onto his side, pulling me against him.
It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon,
he whispers.
You feeling okay?
Yes, I lie. I'm just tired.
Me too.
He feathers his fingers down my arm, then grabs my hand. How did you get in here? I ask, knowing the door was locked from the inside. He smiles.
The window. April took Verity to the doctor, and Crew won't be home from school for another hour.
The rest of the tension built up inside me somehow seeps out with that news. Verity isn't in this house, and I'm at instant peace. Jeremy lays his head on my chest, facing my feet as his fingers explore my panty line.
I checked the lock. It appears if you slam a door hard enough, it could latch into place.
I don't respond to that because I'm not sure I believe it. I'm sure there's a chance, but I think the chance that it was Verity is greater. Jeremy lifts my t-shirt, another one that belongs to him. He kisses a spot between my breasts.
I like it when you wear my shirts.
I run my fingers through his hair and smile. I like it when they smell like you. He laughs.
What do I smell like?
Petrichor. He's dragging his lips down my stomach.
I don't even know what that means.
His voice is a mumble against my skin. It's a word that describes the smell of fresh rain after warm weather. He moves until his mouth is close to mine.
I had no idea there was a word for that.
There's a word for everything. He kisses me briefly, then pulls back. His eyebrows draw together as he contemplates.
Is there a word for what I'm doing?
Probably. What are you referring to? He traces my jaw with a finger.
This,
he says quietly.
Falling for a woman when I shouldn't.
My heart sinks, despite his admission. I hate that he feels guilty for how he's feeling. I understand it, though. No matter the condition of his marriage or his wife, he's sleeping in their bed with another woman. There's not much justification for that.
Do you feel guilty?
I ask him.
Yes.
He regards me silently for a moment.
But not guilty enough to stop.
He lays his head on the pillow next to me. But it will stop, I say. I need to go back to Manhattan, and you're married. His eyes seem to be protecting thoughts he doesn't want to speak out loud. We're both quiet as we stare at each other for a while. He eventually leans in to kiss me before saying,
I thought about what you said in the kitchen last night.
I don't speak in fear of what he's about to say. Was he open to everything I had to say? Does he agree that the quality of his life is just as important as Verity's?
I called a nursing facility who will take her during the week, starting Monday. She'll come home 3 weekends a month.
He waits for my reaction. I think that's the best thing for all three of you. As if I see it happen in real time, the grief begins to evaporate. From him, from this house. The wind is blowing through the window. The house is quiet. Jeremy looks at peace. It's in this moment I decide what to do about the manuscript. I'm not going to do anything. Proving that Verity murdered Harper wouldn't make Jeremy feel better. It would make him feel worse. It would open up so many wounds. It would rip the fresh wounds open even wider. I'm not convinced that Verity is safe to be around, but there are ways to uncover that with time. I think Jeremy just needs better security. A monitor in Verity's room, connected to a motion sensor on the weekends she's here. If she really is faking her injuries, he'll find out. And if he does find out, he'll never allow her around Crew again. And now that she's going to a facility, she'll be monitored even more closely. Right now, things feel okay. Safe.
Stay another week,
Jeremy says. I was planning on leaving in the morning, but now that I know Verity will be gone soon, I'm excited about the idea of being here with him all week, without April,
without Verity. Okay? He raises an eyebrow. You mean, all right? I smile. All right. He presses his mouth to my stomach, kisses me, and then climbs back on top of me. He doesn't remove the shirt I'm wearing as he slides into me. He makes love to me for so long my body grows lithe against his movements. When I feel the muscles of his arms begin to tense beneath my fingertips, I don't want it to end. I don't want him to leave my body. I wrap my legs tightly around him and bring his mouth to mine, his groans sinking into me even deeper. He's kissing me when he comes, his lips rigid, his breath shallow, making no attempt to pull out. He collapses on top of me, still inside me. We're quiet because we both know what we just did. We don't discuss it, though. After Jeremy catches his breath, he slips out of me and lowers his hand, sliding his fingers between my legs. He watches me as he touches me, waiting for me to reach my climax. When I do, I'm not worried about how loud I am because we're the only ones here, and it's bliss. When it's over and I relax against the bed, he kisses me one last time. I need to sneak out now before everyone gets home. I smile at him, watching as he dresses. He presses a kiss to my forehead before walking across the room to climb back out the window. I don't know why he didn't use the door, but it makes me laugh. I pull a pillow over my face and smile. What has come over me? Maybe this house is fucking with my head, because half the time I'm ready to get the hell out of here, and half the time I never want to leave. That manuscript is definitely fucking with my head. I feel like I'm falling in love with the man, and I've only known him for a few weeks. But I'm not only falling in love with him in real life. I've fallen in love with him because of Verity's words. Everything she revealed about him has given me insight into the kind of person he is, and he deserves better than what she gave him. I want to give him what she never did. He deserves to be with someone who will put her love for his children before anything else. I pull the pillow off my face, and I place it under my hips, lifting them so that everything he just left inside me doesn't seep out. 21. I dreamt about Crew when I fell back asleep. He was older, about 16. Nothing significant happened in my dream, or at least if it did, I can't remember it. I only remember the feeling I had when I looked into his eyes, like he was evil. It was as if everything Verity had put him through, and everything he'd seen was embedded into his soul, and he had carried that with him through childhood. It's been several hours since then, and I can't help but wonder if keeping silent about the manuscript is in Crew's best interest. He saw his sister drown. He saw his mother do very little to help her. And while he is very young, there's a possibility that memory will stay with him. That he'll always know she told him to hold his breath before she tipped the canoe over on purpose. I'm in the kitchen with him, just Crew and myself. April left about an hour ago, and Jeremy is upstairs putting Verity to bed. I'm seated at the kitchen table, eating Ritz crackers and peanut butter, staring at Crew as he plays on his iPad. What are you playing? I ask him.
Toy Blast.
At least it's not Fallout or Grand Theft Auto. There's hope for him yet. Crew glances up at me, seeing me take a bite of my cracker. He sets down his iPad and crawls onto the table.
I want one, he says.
It makes me laugh watching him crawl across the table to reach the peanut butter. I hand him the butter knife. He spreads a huge glob onto a cracker and takes a bite, sitting back on his knees. His eyes fill with excitement.
It's good.
Crew licks the peanut butter off the knife and I scrunch up my nose.
Gross, you weren't supposed to lick the knife.
He giggles, like it's funny. I lean back in my seat, admiring him. For all he's been through, he's a good kid. He doesn't whine, he's quiet, he still somehow finds humor in the small things. I don't think he's an asshole, anymore. Not like the first day I met him. I smile at him, at his innocence. And again, I begin to wonder if he has any recollection of that day. I wonder if Crew's memories would determine which therapeutic program is best for him. Since his own father doesn't know the extent of what he's been put through by Verity, I feel like that's on me. I'm the one with the manuscript. I'm the one with the responsibility to tell Jeremy if I think his son has been damaged more than he thinks. Crew, I say,
reaching down to the jar of peanut butter, spinning it with my fingers. Can I ask you a question? He gives me one exaggerated nod. Yup. I smile, wanting him to feel comfortable with my line of questioning. Did you used to have a canoe? He pauses in the middle of licking the butter knife again. Then he says, Yes. I scan his face for clues that I should stop, but he's not giving me any. Did you ever play in it, out on the water? Yes. He licks the knife again, and I feel a little relief that he doesn't seem too disturbed by my conversation. Maybe he doesn't remember anything. He's only 5. His perception of reality as it happens is different from an adult. Do you remember being in the canoe with your mother and Harper? Crew doesn't nod or say yes. He stares at me, and I can't tell if he's scared to answer the question or if he just doesn't remember. He glances down at the table, breaking eye contact with me. He sticks the knife into the jar again and puts it in his mouth, closing his lips over it. Crew? I say, scooting closer to him, placing a gentle hand on his knee. Why did the boat tip over? Crew's eyes flick back to mine, and he pulls the knife out of his mouth for a moment, long enough to say, Mommy said I shouldn't talk to you if you ask me questions about her. I feel the color drain from my face as he casually licks the knife again. I grip the edge of the table, my knuckles white. Your mother talks to you? Crew stares at me for a few seconds without giving me an answer. And then he shakes his head with a look in his eye that makes me feel like he's about to backtrack. He realizes he shouldn't have said that. Crew, does your mommy pretend she can't talk? Crew's teeth clench down while the butter knife is still in his mouth. I see the knife slip up between his teeth, into his gums. Blood begins to slide down his front teeth onto his lips. I shove my chair back hard enough that it hits the floor as I grab the handle of the butter knife and pull it out of Crew's mouth. Jeremy! I cover Crew's mouth with my hand, looking around for a towel that might be within reach. There's nothing. Crew isn't crying, but his eyes are full of fear. Jeremy! I'm screaming now, partly because I need him to help me with Crew and partly because what just happened terrified me. Jeremy is here now in front of Crew, tilting his head back, looking inside his mouth. What happened? I can't even say it. I'm gasping for air. He bit the knife.
He needs stitches.
Jeremy scoops him up.
Grab my keys, they're in the living room.
I rush to the living room and swipe Jeremy's keys from the table. I follow them to the garage, to Jeremy's Jeep. Crew has tears in his eyes as if the pain is setting in. Jeremy opens the back door and puts Crew in his booster seat. I open the front door to climb into the Jeep.
Lowen,
Jeremy says. I turn around just as he closes Crew's door.
I can't leave Verity here alone. I need you to stay.
My heart plummets deep into the pit of my stomach. Jeremy is helping me down from the Jeep before I can object.
I'll call you after they see him.
He grabs his keys from my hand, and I'm frozen in one spot as I watch him back out of the garage. He turns his Jeep around and peels out of the driveway. I look down at my hands, covered in Crew's blood. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't. I hate this job. A few seconds pass before I realize it doesn't matter what I want. I'm here, and so is Verity, and I need to make sure her door is locked. I rush back into the house, up the stairs to her room. Her door is wide open, probably because Jeremy rushed downstairs in a hurry. She's in her bed. The covers are halfway off her body, and one of her legs is dangling, as if Jeremy heard me screaming before he could get her all the way in the bed. Not my problem. I slam the door shut and lock it, then think about what I can do next to ensure my own safety. I rush downstairs when I remember seeing the baby monitor in the basement. The last place I want to be is in the basement, but I power through my fear, using the light on my cell phone, and walk down the stairs. When I was down here with Jeremy, I didn't give the basement much of an inspection, but I know some of the boxes that were stacked up were closed. As I shine my light around the room, I notice almost all of the boxes have been moved and opened, as if someone were rummaging through them. The thought that it might have been Verity makes my mission more urgent.
I don't want to be down here longer than I need to be. I head for the area where I saw the baby monitor sticking out of a box. It was right on top when I noticed it the first time, in one of the only unopened boxes. It's been moved. Right when I'm about to give up my search out of fear of being down here, I see the box on the floor a few feet away. I grab the monitor and the receiver and head back for the stairs, my heart heavy in my feet as I try and ascend the steps. Relief spreads through me when the door opens and I escape. I untangle the cords, then plug the dusty monitor into an outlet next to Verity's computer. I rush back upstairs, but before I reach the top, I stop. I turn around. I go to the kitchen and grab a knife. When I've reached Verity's room again, I clutch the knife in my hand and unlock her bedroom door. She hasn't moved. Her leg is still dangling off the bed. I keep my back to the wall as I move to her dresser and set the other half of the monitor on the dresser. I point it at her bed and plug it in. I walk back to the door and hesitate before exiting her room. I step forward, still clutching the knife, then lift her leg as fast as I can and drop it on the bed. I throw the covers over her, lift the bed rail, and then slam her door shut when I'm back out in the hallway. I lock it. Fuck this shit. I'm panting by the time I make it to the kitchen sink. I wash the blood off my hands, which has dried to my skin. I spend a few minutes cleaning it off the table and floor. Then I go back to the office and sit down in front of the monitor. I make sure my cell phone camera is on video mode in case she moves. If she moves, I want Jeremy to see it. I wait. For an entire hour, I wait. I watch my phone for Jeremy's call. I watch the monitor for Verity's lies. I'm too scared to leave the office and do anything other than wait. The tips of my fingers grow sore from the constant tapping against the desk. When another half an hour goes by, I realize I've resorted to doubting myself again. She would have moved by now, especially since she hasn't even opened her eyes. She didn't see me set up the monitor because her eyes were closed, so she wouldn't even know it was there. Unless she opened them as I was running down the stairs. If that's the case, she saw the monitor and knows I'm watching her. I shake my head. This is driving me insane. There's one chapter left of her manuscript. I need to put this all to rest if I'm going to stay in this house for another week. I can't continue with the back and forth of thinking I'm in danger and thinking I'm crazy. I grab the last several pages and keep my chair pointed at the video monitor. I'll read as I keep an eye on her movements.
Chapter 15. It's only been a few days since Harper died, but I feel my world has shifted more in those few days than in all my years on this earth. The police took my report twice. It's understandable that they'd want to ensure there weren't any holes in my story. It's their job. Their questions were simple enough, easy to answer. Can you explain to us what happened? Harper leaned over the edge of the canoe. It tipped over. We all went under. But Harper never came up. I tried to find her, but I was running out of breath and needed to get crew to safety.
Why were your children not in life vests?
We thought we were in shallow water. We were so close to the dock at first, but then we weren't.
Where was your husband?
He was at the grocery store. He told me to take the kids to the water before he left. I answered all their questions amidst bouts of sobs. Occasionally, I would double over, as if her death were physically affecting me. I think my performance was so good, it made them uncomfortable to ask me more questions. I wish I could say the same for Jeremy. He'd been worse than the detectives. He hasn't let crew out of his sight since Harper passed. The three of us have been sleeping downstairs together in the master, crew in the middle, Jeremy and me separated by yet another child. But tonight was different. Tonight I told Jeremy I wanted him to hold me. So he put crew on the other side of him, and Jeremy lay in the middle. I clung to him for half an hour, hoping we could fall asleep that way. But he wouldn't stop with the fucking questions.
Why did you take them in the canoe?
They wanted to go, I said.
Why weren't they in life jackets?
I thought we were close to the shore.
What was the last thing she said?
I can't remember.
Was she still above the water when you made it to the shore with Crew?
No, I don't think so.
Did you know the canoe was about to tip over?
No, it all happened so fast.
The question stopped for a while, but I knew he was still awake. Finally, after several minutes of silence, he said,
It just doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense?
He pulled back, putting space between my face and his chest. He wanted me to look at him, so I lifted my head. He touched my cheek, gently, with the backs of his fingers.
Why did you tell Crew to hold his breath, Verity?
That's the moment I knew it was over. That's the moment he knew it was over. For a man who thought he knew his wife, that was the first time he'd ever really understood the look in my eyes, and I knew, no matter how hard I tried to convince him, he would never believe me over Crew. He wasn't that kind of man. He put his kids first before his own wife, and that's the one thing I dislike the most about him. I tried, though. I tried to convince him. It's hard to be convincing when tears are streaming down your cheeks and your voice is shaking when you say,
I said that as we were